Author Michael McCambridge joins us on Sports Byline, NFL historian, and the author of his latest book is, and I want everyone to check it out, Lamar Hunt, A Life in Sports. Now, this book chronicles Hunt's career as both a businessman and a pro sports pioneer, and Hunt's impact on American sports includes not only his role in founding the American Football League and the Kansas City Chiefs, but also providing the Super Bowl its name and becoming the only American figure to be inducted into three major professional sports halls of fame, football, soccer, and tennis. And the book also is a fascinating portrayal of a revolutionary influence in sports, American culture, and entrepreneurship. You know, I knew Lamar Hunt fairly well, and when I saw that you had written this book, the first question that popped into my mind, Michael, was how difficult was it to get his life into a number of pages?
Oh, that was one of the major problems. I wanted to try to do justice to all the different worlds in which he ran without getting all Robert Caro with it and going, you know, like three or four volumes, like the life of LBJ. So that was a real challenge. And at the same time, I also wanted to show his life as he lived it. When I've seen people write about or do films about or documentaries about Lamar in the past, they've tend to carve him up into this is what Lamar did in football, here's what he did in soccer, here's what he did in tennis. But to go back and follow the course of his life, the really fascinating thing was for much of his life, he was doing all those things at the same time. And that brought a certain level of chaos and complication. But I think that that's how you had to tell it if you were going to tell the story of this rich life he led.
One of the things that I've always focused on when I interview people is not what they've done, but why they've done it. Now, having said that, when I think of Lamar Hunt, here is a man that was rich. His family was rich. They were in the oil business. But he never came across as a rich man. He came across as a man that cared about anything he got involved in. And that is a dichotomy. Can you help me understand that dichotomy?
Well, I think you've got the right idea. He was somebody who made a choice fairly early in his life that he was not simply going to take this sizable fortune that he'd received from his father and make it an even larger fortune in the oil business the way his brothers did, but instead wanted to chart his own course. And it's my theory that because he had such respect for his father, he wanted his business endeavors to be sound, to make sense financially. He didn't want to be seen as, you know, this rich Texas kid who was just throwing money around. And so that, and because of that, he was very careful in how he spent his money. When he would fly, he would generally fly commercial and then always coach. He used to say, that part of the plane gets there at the same time as the people who fly first class. So I think what it was he was animated not by money, not by power, but by this deep love of sports that he had. And so I think often he's miscast as just another sportsman. And I think really he was in many ways the ultimate sports fan.
One of the things that I always remembered was one night when he was supposed to be on the program, for some reason we didn't get the correct number, and we didn't know how to get a hold of him. So I just suggested you look in the Dallas phone book, and there was his name, and there was his telephone number, and we called him, and we had him on the show, and that was kind of the way he was. What was it that was the drive? What was behind the drive in him?
I think, you know, you're right about the listed phone number, by the way. His wife, Norma, used to just roll her eyes at, you know, all the calls they would get from all hours of the day and night from all over the country. But he wanted to be accessible. I think the drive for him was he wanted to create something new. And he had this belief that seemed crazy at the time that there were a whole bunch of other cities that wanted and could support major league sports franchises. And so with the beginning of the AFL, we saw teams in Houston, Denver, Buffalo, eventually San Diego and Kansas City, places that yearned for the spot on that American sporting stage and had not gotten it in baseball or had not been able to experience it in football. And I think that was a key factor to how loyal and devoted American Football League fans got about their teams really quickly, because they were the only team in San Diego. They were the only major league team in Denver, in Buffalo, and places like that.
He was only 27 years old when in 1959 he announced that he, you know, the American Football League, and you're right, I can't separate what part of pro football is business and what part is personal with me. I just know that it is very important that I succeed. Tell me about those early days and those early challenges for him and also the AFL.
Well, he tried very hard to get an expansion in the existing NFL. And you have to remember, the NFL owners, there were only 12 teams at the time. They'd been through the Depression. They'd been through World War II when they had some teams suspend operations. They had to merge other teams to just keep the league afloat. They come out of World War II and they get this major challenge from this other upstart league, the All-American Football Conference, which spawned the Cleveland Browns and the San Francisco 49ers. And they get through that, and finally in the 50s, for the first time, the NFL owners are making a little bit of money. And so they had no interest in expanding. They had no interest in broadening their horizons. The league offices were still housed in suburban Philadelphia in a neighborhood called Bala Cynwyd. And so Lamar tried and tried to buy an existing franchise or see if he could be granted an expansion franchise, and there was just nothing doing there. So he did what I guess any self-respecting son of a Texas oil billionaire would do and decided to start his own league. And as soon as he did that, the NFL poached the Minneapolis franchise from the AFL and brought it over to the NFL and then started a franchise in Dallas expressly to put the AFL out of business. And so just from the very first days of that league, he was fighting this battle that was perceived in many circles as being hopeless. And I think the key to the league's survival and really an important piece in the development of American sports was Lamar's decision in 1959 to push a joint television contract for all of the AFL owners. It was something that had not been done in pro sports up to that time. But he convinced the other seven owners in the AFL to go along with him. And you got to put this in perspective. It's 1960 now, the first year of the AFL, and you've got eight franchises that have no history, no tradition of loyalty among their fan base, no established stars. But because of the joint TV package with ABC, all eight of the AFL teams made more TV revenue than nearly half of the teams in the NFL. And it's no coincidence that a year later, the NFL pushed through an identical joint TV contract. And that, as you well know, is really the bedrock of the competitive balance that still sets the NFL apart from other leagues today. You know, Bob Costas wrote a book about baseball about 10 years ago called Fair Ball. And in it he said, baseball owners are still fighting today over things that football owners settled 40 years ago. And they settled it because of Lamar Hunt's lead.
We only have a minute before we have to break here, but my read on all of this is as if it were not for his focus and his steady hand on the rudder of the AFL ship, that league would have broken apart. Am I correct in that observation?
I think that's a fair statement. He certainly wasn't the only steady hand. Ralph Wilson, the owner of the Bills, certainly deserves some credit. As is now somewhat commonly known, Ralph kind of bailed out the Oakland Raiders at a time when they were about to go under because he appreciated that you just couldn't have a league with seven teams. And Lamar, as much as it hurt him personally because he was raised in Dallas, and Dallas was his hometown. Lamar made the decision to move the Texans to Kansas City and take a market for themselves, and that was crucial to the development of the AFL as well.
We're talking with Michael McCambridge. This is an outstanding book, and I hope you'll check it out. It's called Lamar Hunt, A Life in Sports. He is an NFL historian, and he has written other books as well. We'll continue talking about Lamar Hunt and those early days of the AFL as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.